We have a publication that if you are one of the 2 million women and men who make up the American banking industry, you can pick up this magazine or listen to our podcast or read one of our email newsletters, and you can learn something new every day that will help you be better at your job.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast. Hi, and welcome back to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw. Many prospering associations have one thing in common, the ability to successfully communicate their story. And that's why today we'll be speaking with Evan Spark, CAE and Senior Vice President for Member Communications at the American Bankers Association. Evan is also a writer, editor, and host of the ABA Banking Journal podcast and an expert when it comes to communications. In this episode, Evan will share how to lead a successful communications team, the importance of storytelling, and why personalizing communication with members may be the way of the future. We'll also dive into what it takes to carry a message across different mediums and how to build a communication strategy that is right for your organization. So let's get started. Welcome, Evan. I'm so excited to host you today on this episode of the Association Advisor Podcast.
Thank you so much, Christine. It's great to see you again and great to be on the podcast. I feel honored to be here. You know, I've heard the company of distinguished guests you've had on, and I was like, oh, I don't know that I'm going to fit into this cohort of amazing guests you have on.
You have a lot to offer, so we're excited to have you. And thank you for the kind words. We appreciate it. A lot of great work out there. So let's start by talking about you. I'd love to have our listeners learn a little bit about you and why writing and editing is something that came naturally to you.
Yeah. So I work at the American Bankers Association, have been here in Washington, D.C. for about 18 years. I kind of fell into this job, into this world by accident. My origin story as an editor is that I've always been kind of a ticky person as a copy editor, but I was not planning to go into a career in writing, journalism, editorial work in any way, and spent my college years at Tulane University in New Orleans kind of cursing the darkness of the campus paper. And then one day they spelled Czech Republic, C-H-E-C-K, and I said, I cannot stand this anymore. And so I went and applied for a job as a copy editor on the campus paper. And so that was my experience as a copy editor, was saying, like, we're going to make this better here. And then when I was applying for jobs in D.C., I was actually applying for a completely different job and more of a policy-focused role. And this think tank I had applied for, the HR guy called me and said, hey, we just filled this position you applied for, but I see you were on the school paper. Would you be interested in an editorial assistant job? And I just needed a job. And I said, sure, I'd be happy to talk to you all about that. So I ended up coming to work as an editorial assistant at a think tank and growing that role over time. And then, you know, moving on to run editing a magazine published by a small philanthropic trade association, and then moving over to the American Bankers Association, where I've worked on a lot of different things, worked on our digital, started here writing our daily e-newsletter, and then adding things over time. We brought our magazine editorial back in-house and moved the publishing relationship from an outside publisher to Naylor, which has been a great partnership over the last, you know, nearly a decade. And so I've worked as the editor of our magazine and host a podcast for the under the banner of the ABA Banking Journal, and do a lot of other things here at ABA. So I've kind of started out as an editor. I also love being a writer. As I've moved into different roles at ABA, I always keep my hat as editor-in-chief of our magazine because I love working on magazines. I think that there's something really special about the vision of an editorial community pulling together a set of content that makes a lot of sense and has that reader in mind. And that's what we always try and do, is keep the banker as a reader in mind, whether you are a bank CEO, whether you are a bank teller, or any point in between. The idea is that we have a publication that if you are one of the 2 million women and men who make up the American banking industry, you can pick up this magazine or listen to our podcast or read one of our email newsletters, and you can learn something new every day that will help you be better at your job. And that's what we're here to do. So I've always kept the magazine as I've gone into different roles at ABA. And now as Senior Vice President for Member Communications, I lead an amazing team of writers and editors who are here working on, you know, everything from executive comms to marketing copywriting to our print and digital publications. And we have this one mission of educating bank employees about all the things that ABA is doing on their behalf, but also how all the information that they need to know to be continue to be amazing and do the amazing work that they are doing of serving Americans' financial needs.
So there's some really key points I want to go over that was really resonating with me and I think the audience is, first of all, many people kind of accidentally get into this industry, which is amazing. And I want to say that to the next generation, because if you're out there in the early phases of your career in education, it's a great place to be. And likely you're learning skills that are very applicable to the association industry. So you're another great example. There's many people I've spoken to who have a different version of your story, but didn't set out to be an association professional, but yet found themselves through skills that got here. So that's encouraging. The other is communications. I mean, I feel like the most important thing is communication, because we are all about community. And it starts with solid communication. And to your point, you have very different channels, podcast, magazine, online, and that's what stitches the community together. So the fact that you've been able to use your passion for writing and journalism to work through building that community is huge. And then the other part of it is we are in a content creation environment, right? And more now, it's about content creation and the relevance of that. And I love that you said you start with the audience in mind. And I think that's a real good takeaway, that anything you're doing when you're working with associations, you have to keep who your audience is in mind. I loved what you articulated, that there's over 2 million professionals, women and men, serving this industry. And that regardless of what they're doing, you have a communication platform for them. So that's great. There's a lot there. So thank you for sharing that. Also, you know, you've been actively involved in the broader association community, including serving on ASAE's Communications Professional Advisory Council. So talk to us a little bit about what some of the biggest challenges are you might be facing or associations are facing today and what you do to tackle those challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a great time serving for 3 years on the ASAE Communications Professional Advisory Council. I kind of got involved with ASAE because I realized, you know, I was spending a lot of time connecting with bankers who are wonderful. I love spending time with bankers at our events and going on the road to do reporting and things like that. But I also realized I need to do more networking with my community. And as you mentioned earlier, associations is a job that a lot of people fall into by accident. We don't realize how big the world of associations as employers is until you're in it or until you're working, you know, adjacent to it as a service provider. So that was why I said I need to go start getting involved with ASAE, in part because I think we're doing some really cool things here at ABA that I want to share with that audience, but also because I have a lot to learn from my association peers. I continue to be incredibly impressed. I am so privileged to work at ABA, where we are a large staff association. We have 50 plus people in our communications and marketing area. So that's a big team that can accomplish a lot. We have a lot of resources to do what we do. It's amazing to learn from some of my small association peers who are these, you know, 1, 2, 3 person shops, and they are doing everything and figuring out all kinds of creative ways to leverage AI, to put all kinds of different data solutions to work so that they can maximize their ability to connect with their members without having all the resources of a large team to be able to do all of that work. So it's really inspiring and really neat. And I've enjoyed getting to learn about from some of my peers about that. I will say one of the things when we think about challenges, one of the specific challenges that we have is communicating with our members in a way that is tailored and personal to them. Mm-hmm. So bankers are united in that our members have this shared vision of providing financial services to meet Americans' needs. But there are over 4,000 banks in this country, And there are a lot of different ways that banks can meet their customers' financial needs. And in a country with as many people as we have in the United States, and with as big of a country and as diverse of an economy and diverse of a population that we have, we're going to need a lot of different kinds of banks to meet those needs. We have the large global financial institutions who are critical in providing credit needs and dealing with trade finance and ensuring that our largest companies have the access to capital they need to continue growing and employing Americans. I just did a podcast with a bank CEO from Oklahoma, and he leads a regional bank that is not in a lot of major population centers, but there are still major employment centers within the Midwest, South Central region. And they serve some critical niche industries that a lot of larger banks would not find as profitable to serve, but that smaller banks would not have the scale and scope to serve. So regional banks are critically important. And then we have mid-sized banks, which are vital. And then we have community banks, which serve very local credit needs, and they can often be more flexible on figuring out how to meet the credit needs of a particular community or a particular market segment, because they don't have to have as much structure due to their scale. So community banks are critically important too. My wife and I are working on building a summer place up in Northern New York. And we've had the privilege of working with a community bank on that loan. And it's been great, because up in Northern New York, you run into up in the Adirondack Mountains, you run into some, various obstacles in your process. And the bank has been great working with us and being flexible to help meet the needs, because they're up there in Northern New York and they understand, hey, we're going to run into these obstacles. We're going to work with you to figure out how to get this project completed, instead of, being kind of cookie cutter in their approach. So we have all of these different kinds of banks in the country, and we need all kinds of different strategies to connect with them and to understand what are their most pressing challenges, what do they think is most important, how are we going to educate them about what ABA is doing on their behalf. There are a lot of distinct things that ABA does depending on the size of the bank or the business model of the bank, because we understand that these banks are unique and we have different strategies, products, services that are provided that are, again, unique to the bank. And so we need to have unique, personalized, tailored communication. That's one of our big challenges and something we've been doing some exciting things about here at ABA.
Well, yeah. So first of all, kudos to you and your wife for building a summer place. I hope that comes out wonderful. That's an exciting chapter. But, it is an interesting perspective, because if you think about how the banking industry has shifted and the consumers of banking, right, there's some of the next generation, they've never even been inside of a bank, right, that the landscape has drastically changed. So you talked about some exciting things you're doing. Can you share an example or two of what you're doing to personalize content to meet the different audience needs?
Absolutely. So when I joined ABA, my only job at the time was to write a daily newsletter, which was a bigger job than just a one-person job. And so it's a little more than that now. They've kind of migrated into a whole news service that we provide. But it was a daily newsletter. It was static. We compiled all the news, wrote these short news items, and sent it out. We sent it out to everybody who was subscribed on our list. And this is about a list of 90 to 100,000 bankers across the country who get our daily news publication. This is basically the same style of communication, right? A single static email that has everything in it. We started that in the 90s, and we were still doing it up until earlier this year in that format. Now, of course, we have updated the fonts, updated the email platforms and things like that. We had more visuals, more graphics, but it was the same basic content. It's like, if you subscribe to this newsletter, you will get the same content. When a few years ago, we realized we need to revamp our strategy. We need to rethink how we are engaging with our audience, and we need to go out to market, and we need to look at what are the tools and solutions that can help us get there. How can we become more personalized to our members? And this is one of the things we had heard for years in our member feedback. Large banks would say, oh, you write about all this community bank stuff, it's not relevant to me. From community banks would say, oh, you write about all this large bank stuff, this is not relevant to me. And I would say, well, we cover the waterfront. We're going to write about everything, because we're the only trade association that represents banks of all sizes in the United States. You're going to have to read about this. What if you didn't have to? What if that email that you got was going to be tailored to your interests? What if you, let's say you're a Bank Secrecy Act officer at a local bank, and you really need resources about financial crimes and fraud and compliance and AML, CFT issues and the technology that goes into that? But you don't need anything about lending, right? You're not a lender. You're not going to be a lender. You're still a banker. You're interested in the health of the banking industry, but you need specific content that's about, being the best BSA officer that you can possibly be. How can we make that possible? So we thought about it. We went out and look to see if there were ways to personalize this. And we ended up partnering with a company called Rasa, which I believe Naylor partners with as well. They're well known now in the association space. And what we realized is we didn't want to outsource our content creation. You know, there are products that you can go to that will make you kind of write everything in a particular style and it'll sound like that product. And it didn't sound like us anymore, right? Or there's products you can use where they'll take care of everything and they'll find external news sources that match the topics you want to cover. Well, we have an amazing team in-house of writers on our daily news publication and our long-form magazine that who produce amazing content internally, and a network of freelancers who work for us as well, and a network of subject matter experts inside the building. I mean, we have hundreds of banking subject matter experts who work on all kinds of issues and who also write for us. And so we realized we have an amazing content creation strategy, amazing content creation platform, the Banking Journal website, aba.com/bankingjournal, that Naylor hosts for ABA is where we kind of host all of this content. And we want to make sure that members can get easy access to that. We don't want to outsource the content game because we're doing really well with that, right? So what we decided is we ended up finding that we're working with Rasa. They have personalized email newsletters that use AI to determine what a user is most likely to click on based on their professional interests, based on their job history, based on their click history. It will serve up the most relevant content every day, and it will kind of serve up the most relevant content first, right? So if you, you know, if you're that BSA officer, you may get some of the other content, but you'll get your BSA content right up at the top of your newsletter. So we tested it out with one of our newsletters. We have about over a dozen subject-specific newsletters. We tested this concept out, made sure it worked, worked great. So we just completed a multi-year implementation of Rasa on all of our email newsletters, including our flagship ABA Daily News Bites, which now goes out to about 90,000 bankers every day. And that's now fully on the Rasa platform. And we are seeing some amazing results from that. First of all, we're seeing an uptick in our open rates. We're seeing an uptick in our reader engagement. But because the content, instead of being the static content that's written out in an email newsletter, we're directing people instead to the ABA Banking Journal website to get the full story of whatever it is that they're reading about. And that website traffic, since we switched to the Rasa format, that website traffic has doubled. Yeah. So we are seeing a significant uptick in reader engagement with our primary content channel because of the shift in strategy. And we're really excited about the results we're going to be able to see from that and the benefit that brings to our partnership with Naylor and to our potential for non-news revenue that we receive from that partnership.
That was fantastic. Thank you for articulating that. I mean, we do use them as a platform too. And I think the important takeaway, you know, if I go back to where we started, you talked about the criticalness of meeting the needs of each segment of your audience. And It's no longer just a one size fits all. It's you have to segment it. And we now have technology and tools. And within that also, they use AI to help with that. So do you have anything you want to share about the AI component of that and how that's helped as well? Or is that just embedded in the platform and that's why you're getting those good results?
Yeah, I think it's embedded in the platform. So it's making sure that people are getting a better tailored, customized newsletter in their inbox every single day. So that's something that we could never have done without an AI tool. Any kind of customization would have to be done manually. That's the kind of hidden benefit. We have these amazing reader engagement benefits, member engagement benefits, but the hidden benefit is the incredible operational efficiency that it resulted in for our team. Instead of having to spend time composing and building an email manually, right. It's like, imagine if you're trying to customize that based on different segments that you'd have to manually determine, right? That would be very difficult, very costly in terms of your human capital. And it's having our staff spend time on, instead of spending time on content creation, they're spending time on manual processes. And that's what I saw as a real win for us, is being able to redirect the time of my amazing writer and editor colleagues away from having to do manual entry of content into a WYSIWYG editor to put out, you know, an email newsletter. Instead, we're putting that time into every day into writing and creating more content for our members. And so we're just continuing to add value. And we also just make their jobs better, right? They're talented content creators. And that's something that I'm excited to make sure that they continue to do. You know, there's a lot out there on, can ChatGPT or other similar solutions generate the content that associations use to engage their members. And I'm just going to stick up here for the power of human generated content to reach humans. I mean, we're all the victim of a lot of marketing emails from people who are clearly using ChatGPT to generate their marketing emails. I don't find those to be successful in terms of grabbing my attention. I think it's pretty obvious the marketers who are relying heavily on that are doing. And, you know, even if ChatGPT were going to get a lot better, if you were to get rid of some of the hallucination problems, even if it were to get a lot better, I think that I would trust the amazing human colleagues to be able to write in a way that connects with banking industry professionals. So I don't want to outsource any of our content creation to AI. What I do want to do is outsource the work that is really tedious and almost kind of impossible for humans to do, which is to segment audiences based on user preferences. That's the kind of thing I want to outsource to AI. And that's what I'm really excited that we were able to do with this email modernization project.
Yeah, no. And again, a few great takeaways in there, Evan, is first of all, a lot of associations in particular struggle with bandwidth, right? And so what you're doing in a really intelligent way is you're taking what your team does well, which is content creation. It needs to be unique and topical. And rather, you're using AI to create efficiencies and so that they get some of their time back and replacing manual activities with AI, but you get the rich self-created content from your experts in-house, which is amazing. Speaking of your team, in addition to the newsletters and what you just articulated, they also produce the Banking Journal. We talked about that and the podcast. So in terms of different channels, we're in a multi-omni-channel world. How do you go about thinking about which channels you should be using with communicating with your members? And do you find any of those to be more effective than another?
It's a great question. I think we kind of have to have an all of the above approach. You know, one of the things that we as communication professionals can get trapped in is a mindset that, oh, we are saying the same thing over and over again, right? You know, we keep saying the same thing, but our members may have only heard it once, or they may not have heard it at all. And they may need repeated reminders of what we're doing or what issue is going on Capitol Hill or what issue is going on at a regulatory agency for them to truly understand it and how it applies to them and to their job. So we've got to repeat the message and we've got to try all different kinds of channels to get out there. And part of it is how some members will come and tell us basically by engaging with our website. They'll tell us how they want to receive information. Some of them will want to receive information in an email. Some of them will want to receive information from through an online community, which we've just rolled out and relaunched our ABA Communities Higher Community Project on the HireLogic platform. And that's been a great start there. Some people are going to want to hear a podcast because, you know, they don't have a lot of time to read an email, but they can pop in a podcast while they're commuting to work or on their lunch break or running on the treadmill at the gym. And then they can get some of the key information they need to get about the industry and what's going on that way. We kind of want to do all of the above and make sure that we are giving people the ways that they want to engage with us. It's always hard to figure out the right balance of how to talk about what you're doing as an association, right? This is, I think, a big challenge for people in the association sector. I think we are professionally pretty humble and we want to put our members first and we want to put our members out there. And so that means it's hard to talk about if we've had an advocacy win on behalf of our members or if we've, you know, kind of had a major product launch that is going to save our members a lot of money. It's sometimes hard for us as association professionals to say, hey, we did that. Yeah. We did that. We're great. You know, and none of us want to talk like that. But I think sometimes it's really important for us to figure out the right ways to educate members and say, hey, we are working on your behalf. We're putting your dues dollars to good use. We are making sure that we are the most effective advocates that we can possibly be. Here are some of the results we got. We're trying to make sure that we earn that dues check from our members every when it's time to renew. I think that's a particularly tricky challenge in terms of communicating to members is getting that tone right about how to emphasize the value that you're creating for your members while also keeping their interests and their priorities and their presence as the purpose that our association exists front and center.
Yeah. And I want to go back to the channel topic is that, you know, what you just articulated, which is what we find is channel consumption is as personal as the content itself, meaning that every member consumes content different. So there's that opportunity is you can reach far more people by using a variety of channels. The challenge is that there's a lot to put out and manage. But as you talked about AI, there are tools and technology that can help with that. So what we hear, Evan, often is that associations sometimes will sit behind a boardroom and say, it's got to be all digital, or all print, or all this, or all that. And there's really no one magic answer, because we all are humans and we consume it differently. So you're smart to understand that content consumption is personal and it's on a choice and preference. And that's the world we live in. So that's great.
And I think what I would add there is that content has a lot of different half-lives. And we try to use all the parts of the buffalo when it comes to the content that we create. If we are writing an article, you know, an article that goes on our website, it may also go in the print magazine, where it may get seen by a different segment, or Absolutely. It may just help, you know, reinforce the message in a different way. Should someone happen to pick up the print magazine and flip through it. Most of the content that I create on my podcast channel is also going in the print magazine or on the website in some way, and vice versa. The podcast feeds the daily newsletter. The daily newsletter content helps us generate longer form content, because we realize, hey, this is an issue that bankers are really responding to. There's more of a story there. Let's leverage some of what we've already created to educate on a broader scale about what we're doing. And then, you know, a lot of the content that we produce can become content marketing products for my colleagues who work in our marketing department here at ABA. We try and make sure that we're using everything that we can in a lot of different channels, so we're not wasting the time that we put into producing a piece of content. This is something I've learned a lot about from my colleagues in the ASAE world, is that it takes a lot of hours for an association to produce content, all the event content that we have, right? We're trying to recapture that in terms of taking a session at an event and having one of our team members write an article based on that, that will capture all the key learning from that panel discussion and transmitting it to a much broader audience through our print and digital channels and the member comms side. So we're all constantly trying to capture as much content and as much readership as we can through the individual pieces of content that we develop, by repurposing it as much as possible according to our strategy in a way that it provides multiple opportunities to engage our members.
I want to make sure we emphasize it, because for association leaders who are trying to figure out what the right content strategy is, a solid, effective content strategy should have content that is repurposed through multiple channels, and that becomes very effective. So I think you're right to point that out. It's about making the content specific for the platform, but not maybe changing it, just making it modified for its proper use. But that's great. And speaking of content, let's talk a little bit about campaigns. So I know you recently ran a notable campaign calling Banks Never Asked That campaign to combat phishing. So tell us a little bit about how that campaign evolved and how you come up with your campaign ideas.
Absolutely. So I can't take credit for this one. This was the work of my colleagues, particularly in our marketing department, although some of the amazing copywriters who work on my team contributed a lot to that content. And then we haven't had an outside agency partner who worked on that campaign as well. One of the things we've heard from banks over the years is that they are concerned that their customers fall victim to phishing scams. And some of these phishing scams will leverage the bank themselves to try to make that part of the scams. So you get, you know, a text that looks like it's from your bank and it wants you to click on a link, or it wants you to, you know, send some information, or you get a phone call that says, hey, we're from your bank, we need you to give us some information. And banks don't do that. And we wanted customers to know banks will never ask that, right? So we created a campaign called Banks Never Ask That. And it has involved some videos that we created with some fantastic sketch comedians who basically create all these absurd scenarios to illustrate the point that banks are not going to ask that. And you can see some of this online at banksneverasked.com. You can see some of these videos. We also have all kinds of social media collateral with questions like, you know, pancakes or waffles? Banks never ask that, right? You know, it's like a lot of the campaign elements are seasonal. So at this time of year, we're recording this in October, we would be asking, do you like candy corn or not? You know, and I'm on team candy corn here. So, and the point is of that, asking that, this kind of silly question is to reinforce that, well, your bank's never going to ask you that. And your bank is also never going to ask you to send your PIN or to click on this link or to send your account logins or your account number or anything like that. And that's the benefit. So we create this material. We also then allow banks that participate in the campaign. And we have thousands of banks who participated in Banks Never Asked That over the years. We've been doing it at 4 or 5 years now. So we've been able to reach millions of people with the message that banks never ask that. We have a huge number of participating banks in the campaign currently going on in the fall. This year, we added a new component, a kind of a complementary campaign called Practice Safe Checks, which focuses on how you as a consumer can avoid becoming a victim of check fraud. check fraud is a rising concern. It's actually a growing form of fraud, even as checks are a declining share of the payments landscape. It is still a significant vector for fraud, and a lot of that fraud can be avoided if individuals learn some key things that they can do to help prevent themselves from falling victim to check fraud. And so that's what we're doing at Practice Safe Checks. Both of those campaigns are available on the ABA website for associations to take a look at. Banks Never Asked That has won awards from the association community for its effectiveness at, you know, communicating to the public on this critical issue. And again, it's something that it helps out our banks, but it, more than that, it helps our customers by protecting them from falling victim to a scam or a fraud.
Great. That's really good information, really important advocacy for the public consumers and banking. It is on the rise, and you hate seeing people become victim to that. So, you know, throughout our conversation, Evan, you mentioned the word team a lot. Any takeaways or advice you could give about how your approach for leading teams, what it's like and how you interact with your teams to get the kind of fantastic output you're getting from your teams?
I don't know how much of this is revolutionary or not, but I'll just say, in my case, it's been hire some really great people and then trust them and give them the bandwidth and the space to create terrific work. So we have really talented writers and editors, and I'm really, really proud of the people who I get to work with every single day. They are incredibly skilled at capturing sometimes very obscure topics, very hard to understand topics. If we have to talk about, you know, like some kind of fiduciary products, or if we get to the point where we have to talk about derivatives, I mean, I have no idea. I'm not a finance guy. So but my colleague who writes our daily newsletter, he figures out a way to write about it in a way that's both accurate and educational to our members and not written in strictly in legalese. So amazing people on this team. And my philosophy has always been, you know, I'm here as a partner. I'm here as an advisor. If you have something you want to brainstorm on, I have one colleague who works in executive comms, and we'll just sit down and kind of brainstorm through a speech topic together, make sure that we are bringing out the key issues that we want to highlight for this particular audience. And so I love being able to brainstorm with my colleagues and come up with creative ideas and help work together to solve business problems. But ultimately, I hired them because they are experts in whatever their thing that is that they're doing. And so I have to kind of step back and say, you know what, I might have done this project differently if I were in that seat, but I trust this person to do an excellent job. And so I'm going to say, you know, unless there's kind of a serious red flag, or if there's a, you know, there might be a issue where sometimes I have some perspective on a particular dynamic of a challenge that this person doesn't have. And so I'm going to communicate that and say, hey, we may need to change things based on this additional perspective that you might not have had. But in general, I say, I want to trust you to do a great job. And I'm going to say, I think I may not have done it exactly this way, but you are a talented professional. I trust you to get this job done in the way that makes sense. You have a good reason for the way you're going about this project. I'm going to advocate for the way you're doing it because I trust you as a valued member of this team. So hire the right people, give them some freedom and flexibility, trust them to get the job done. And I think that leads to great results. But again, I don't think that's particularly revolutionary or not new to any of our members or any of your listeners.
Evan, what's interesting is you said it's not revolutionary, but you know, a lot of leaders have lost that trust factor. I think hybrid environments have contributed to that because I feel like there's a lot of leadership out there that feels like if they're not looking at their team and seeing them every day, it's hard to trust. But that's so important, right? Because by trusting your teams, you're empowering them. And, you know, you'll get involved when needed, but I think you have to be okay with a different approach. It may not be your approach, but it still gets a great outcome. You have to be okay with that. And the trust thing is something we have to remind ourselves as leadership to don't forget to trust your teams. If you can't, then you've hired the wrong people. So it's a whole different conversation. So I think that was great. And my final question about the business is, you have an exciting milestone, 150th year anniversary of the ABA. So tell us a little bit about what you want to accomplish in communicating this milestone to the banking community.
We are so excited. In 2025, ABA will be celebrating our 150th anniversary. It's also the 100th anniversary of our 501c3 affiliate, the ABA Foundation. through which a lot of our community engagement work, financial education work takes place. So we've got these two big anniversaries to celebrate, and we're going to be putting together a lot of collateral that's going to be coming out in 2025. July 2025 is the actual birthday of the ABA. We started in Saratoga Springs in July of 1875.
Wow.
There's a really fascinating story about how we got started as an association. We were born out of the Panic of 1873, which is one of the most severe and disruptive financial crashes that ever happened in the U.S. economy. I mean, it's up there, not quite as bad as the Great Depression, but it's up there. It was a really disruptive financial event. A lot of banks failed during that time period. And some of the banks that survived, they made it through in part because they were collaborating with their peers. They were corresponding about best practices. They were helping each other out with infusions of liquidity where needed. We didn't have a Federal Reserve at that point. We didn't have a discount window. We didn't have the mechanisms we have today to facilitate, you know, liquidity and prevent some of these preventable bank failures that were taking place in the 19th century. And so it was bankers getting together to solve these problems that convinced them that there might be some value in getting together as an association. In fact, there's a really interesting story from St. Louis in early 1875. So a couple years after the Panic of 1873, but you're still feeling the economic fallout of that. And bankers are continuing these informal networks that they'd started. A couple of bankers in St. Louis were walking down the street and they saw a women's suffrage meeting taking place. And they said, hey, if these advocates for women's suffrage can get together and organize, why can't we as bankers get together, organize, and figure out a way to accomplish great things together? And so they started writing letters and they gathered everyone together in Saratoga Springs, which was at that time a major resort destination. It's a beautiful spot, an all-American town right there. So they met at City Hall in July of 1875 and formed the American Bankers Association. And I think, you know, if you look at a lot of associations that exist today, date their origins to the late 19th century, in part because we had reached a point where industries were maturing and where communications technologies and transportation technologies were finally facilitating people from disparate parts of the country getting together. Organize, have a convention because everyone could travel from the different places they lived by train and get together for kind of the first time in American history. It was a lot easier to do that. So we see some of these associations coming together. And for our ABA, our values and priorities are the same as they were back when we started in 1875. We're all about help advocating for banks. We're all about educating bankers. We're all about innovating and helping bankers innovate on behalf of their customers. We have some amazing stories about how that's happened over the years, and we'll be sharing those next year in 2025.
Well, we look forward to seeing that and hearing it. It's quite a testament to the work that ABA is doing and providing the member value for it to have that longevity. It'd be interesting to go back in time and kind of do an analysis of how many associations were formed more than 100 years ago. So now you've got me thinking about that. Evan, so many great takeaways. Thank you so much for sharing your advice and how you manage your teams and some tricks and tips on communication and technology. If you listen to this podcast, and I think you do, you know I end by asking all my guests to share a recommended reading book. We've developed such an impressive list, so I can't wait to hear what you're going to recommend.
Well, I have a couple that I've read recently that have been really fun. One is called You're Not Listening by Kate Murphy, and it is a book all about listening. I'm not sure if one of your guests has previously recommended this one.
No, they have not. It's a new one, so thank you.
It's all about this. She's a journalist, and she writes about the science of listening and interviews all kinds of people. I found this very helpful as a podcast host, but I also think it's helpful in real life. I was sharing some takeaways with my wife as I was reading it, and she said, oh, I'm really glad you're sharing some of the takeaways from this. I think there's a lot you can learn from this book. So the You're Not Listening by Kate Murphy, and another wonderful book that I read, and just speaking of history, a book by Brinker Buck called Life on the Mississippi. And I don't know if this is how to describe him. He's a combination journalist, memoirist, and historian. And he built a flatboat and sailed it down the Mississippi from, this is a modern day story. He built a 19th century flatboat, sailed it downriver from Pittsburgh to all the way to New Orleans. And along the way, he has all these amazing kind of remarkable adventures. And, you know, you hear about the storms along the river and navigating among these and massive barges on the Mississippi. But he's also telling the story of how the Western United States, the kind of the Midwest, the lower river south, and then beyond, was settled with the use of these flatboats. And the economic story that took place as these flatboat travelers went down river, down the Ohio, down the Mississippi, and how that opened up the interior of the United States to the world economy. And then there's a lot in there that's about, it's not all a wonderful story. I mean, you know, there's, you know, he has stories about, you know, the slave economy that was centered along the Mississippi and in the, you know, first half of the 19th century, and how that was, how the flatboat era shaped the cotton economy of the region. But it's a really wonderful account of a firsthand narrative combined with a historical retelling. And I think it's something that anybody who loves American history would love to read. So that's Life on the Mississippi by Rinker Buck.
Evan, two fantastic books, very different, and neither have been recommended before. I am definitely going to get the listening book for sure. So thank you for that as a podcast host, just as a human and as a leader. I think the better we can all get at listening, we have more productive relationships overall. So such a great episode. So many good takeaways. I appreciate your time, and we definitely appreciate the partnership we have with ABA. So thank you very much, Evan.
Thank you, Christine. It was great to talk to you, and we appreciate the partnership we have with Naylor.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. If you'd like to access more resources to serve your association needs or join our newsletter, you can visit our website at naylor.com or just click the links in the show notes of this episode. Please be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast listening app, like Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, so you won't miss an episode. Also, I'd love to hear from my listeners directly. Feel free to email me at christine.shaw@naylor.com. Until next time, we at Naylor are wishing your association success.